The content of this program is meant for educational purposes only, because knowledge is power. However, the controversial subject matter discussed may not necessarily reflect the views of this station, its management, staff, or its advertisers. Change only happens when we, the people, become part of the solution. That's why more and more patriotic Americans are tuning in to the Power Hour. Now, here's your host, Dave Krieger.
And a pleasant good morning. It is 8 a.m. Central Time, and those, of course, of you listening to us now in St. Petersburg, Florida, on WBGS 1610 a.m., we're on from 8 to 10, and so we're in the 9 o'clock hour there. WKDW 97.5 FM in Northport, Florida, also joining us on the broadcast as well. We appreciate you. For those of you listening to us during this time period that I just talked about, 8 to 10 a.m. Eastern, the phone lines are open at 844-769-2944. If you want to chime in on anything in particular, OptiVita products are all 10% off this week, by the way, but this is how you support the Power Hour right here. I have the Joyce Riley commemorative coffee mug. Joyce is our original founding broadcaster here. She was a surgical nurse. And, of course, the Power Hour logo is right here. A donation of $100 or more is going to get you this gorgeous Joyce Riley coffee mug so you can have coffee with us in the morning here. Power Hour is also on Substack at thepowermall.com. You can also subscribe to our newsletters, get news highlights and other insights into things you need to maintain your personal health. And we appreciate that. And we also have guests on this show. For those of you just joining us in the stream of things, we're live streaming this event. For those of you watching us during our regular broadcast time, you can go to thepowermall.com or powerhour.com rather and click on the view link and see Dr. Murray Sabrin in all his glory. He too has a Substack website at murraysabrin.substack.com. So we got that out, and I've been talking to you beforehand about what Dr. Murray Sabrin has done. He is a star news talk radio guest for about three decades. His stock continues to rise as a citizen of influence and champion of liberty. And, of course, we talked about libertarian principles. That's libertarian with a small L on this show many times. And, of course, he has been asked multiple times, you believe in free enterprise, limited government, personal responsibility. What makes you different than a Republican? And he responded with, I mean it. That's the reason that makes it different from GOP, because there are so many rhinos out there. That is Republican in name only, because of our uniparty system. We've got some real serious issues going on right now, which we talked about in the last hour of our show. And we get some clarification this hour with Dr. Murray Sabrin. Welcome to the show, sir.
Good to be with you, Dave.
And see, the thing is that you have a book out now called From Immigrant to Public Intellectual, an American Story, which I got a copy of and managed to scan through. And, of course, this is a thing about an immigrant child's rise from humble beginnings to forge a stellar career as an educator, author, candidate, and media influencer. You explain in libertarianism in plain language using your own life story. Maybe you want to elaborate on that a little bit?
Well, it's very simple, Dave. I came to America when I was a toddler in 1949 with my older brother and my parents, who were the only ones in their families to survive the Holocaust in their native Poland. My father was a partisan commander where he was in charge of 230 people fighting the Nazis in Germany. And for him, the war was over in July of 1944 when his section of Poland was liberated by the Soviet army. And he wrote about his exploits during World War II in a little booklet he wrote in the 90s called We Dare to Live. And my older brother had it translated, and it's available on Amazon. It's a wonderful little booklet. Growing up, I used to ask him about his experiences during World War II, and they were really hair-raising experiences. And there was one story he'd never told me about, which I read for the first time in the book when I got a hold of it back in the 15 years ago. And if he had accepted a request by a Soviet colonel to parachute into Germany in order to defeat the Nazis, 90% of the men that went to Germany in that parachute drop were killed. And he decided not to do it because for him, he said the war was over. He had a wife. He had a child. and therefore he didn't accept that offer. And so here's another example of how one decision has an enormous impact not only on his life, but his future children.
Wow. Amazing story. And, you know, he was one of many that probably said no. There's a lot of us going through that right now with a number of different things going on in the country, and that is saying no to CBDCs. I know you've done research on central bank digital currencies.
Yeah.
And, of course, this is a real problem because when Nixon took us off the gold standard, and people don't quite understand when you hold up a dollar bill, and I have to educate people constantly about this because they go, well, that's a dollar bill. I go, you know, really? There's no intrinsic value. How do you have intrinsic value in a dollar bill? That sort of thing just does not exist. And so what people don't understand is now even Texas, and I think there's other states that are literally considering some sort of gold-backed currency. And see, what I've been encouraging a lot of our listeners to do is to look at this, and I'm sure our people at KDW Radio will appreciate the fact that I'm holding up right here a 0.999 fine Aaron Gobrach Irish silver commemorative. There's the hold it up there so you can see the shamrock. You know, that's the thing. You know, a lot of us are investing in silver coin because gold is rather expensive. But the thing is, right now, our dollar is only legal tender for all debts, public and private, because the will of the people, we the people, say it is. And other countries are trying to take that away from us. So, you know, explain how this de-dollarization is happening and what it's doing to our economy.
Well, there's so much to unpack here, but I'll give it my best shot because this is a topic I love to teach my students about when I taught financial history in the United States, and we reviewed the evolution of the U.S. money and banking system from the colonial period up till the present. And students really had their eyes open as to how the American financial system evolved, because as a business student, they're going into the business world and they want to know exactly what's going on and how to make good decisions. And one of the decisions you have to make is what's happening during the course of a business cycle, which we know from good economic analysis is caused by the Federal Reserve's manipulation of interest rates. So having said that, initially, the dollar was defined as 1/20th of an ounce of gold. You have to go back to 1792 to the Coinage Act, where the dollar was defined as a unit of gold, because the framers knew that if you print money, you're going to have a disaster. And that's exactly what happened, ironically, during the American Revolution, where the Continental Congress printed up money that became worthless. And there was a little pamphlet written about that called Not Worth a Continental. It was so devalued because of the endless printing by the Continental Congress in order to support the revolution that the money became worthless. So gold was the initial dollar. The dollar was not an entity in of itself, but it was a name for a specific unit weight of gold. Now, why was gold chosen as money? And this is probably one of the most important lessons in world history. Money has to be something that is accepted by everyone, and people have to trust it because it won't be devalued, it won't be debased. And so money has to have several attributes. It has to have homogeneity, which means that 1 ounce of gold is the same as another ounce of gold. It could be divisible. You can take an ounce of gold and make it into small pieces. It has to be a high value per unit, so you can take several ounces of gold, which today is worth quite a bit, and travel anywhere in the world and would be accepted. And it has to be a store of value. So all these things is what makes something money. Paper money, banknotes, were claims to the gold that was in reserve in the banks. And so when the banks issued more banknotes than they had gold, you'd get bank runs. You'd have banking panics like we had throughout the whole 19th century in America, when banks overextended themselves by lending out more money than they had gold in reserves. So that's one of the first lessons of financial history, is that if a bank is going to be a money warehouse, which it initially was, then you've got to have the gold and the banknotes being in match. In other words, if you have 100 ounces of gold in the bank, you could only have 100 ounces of banknotes representing those 100 ounces of gold. So that's the first lesson. And what do we know about money and banking? The bankers love to inflate their banknotes because they earn interest on the loans that they make. So there's an incentive for bankers to inflate. And so the way the bankers got around that was the creation of the Federal Reserve, which became the lender of last resort. Because when the banks failed in 1907 with the panic of 1907. That was the last great panic before the creation of the Federal Reserve in 1913. And so the bankers got what they wanted, a federal government agency created by the federal government to backstop the banks when they engaged in reckless speculation and lending. And of course, that didn't work because in 1929, we had another panic, and that was the stock market crash and the banking panic of 1929 to 1933, when FDIC came in under FDR in order to protect the depositors who were getting shafted by the banks. Because if you went to the bank with your bank notes and the bank already had all its gold drained, you were out of luck. If you remember that famous scene at the end of It's a Wonderful Life by Jimmy Stewart, there was a run on the Bailey savings and loan. Why? Because banks do something very foolish. They make loans with deposits, they take in deposits and they have long-term loans. So you have a mismatch between the depositors and the borrowers of the bank. And we saw that very clearly in It's a Wonderful Life, where George Bailey says to people who are coming to the bank, they want their money. And George Bailey says, I don't have the money. That money is in John's house because we gave him a mortgage in order for him to buy the house. So the banks have a fundamental structural problem. And we saw this clearly in Silicon Valley Bank, where people were running on the bank to get their money out. And the bank didn't have enough money because they were buying treasuries, which went down in value. So we have contemporary examples of how banking is a flawed institution using the model that they have. So when it comes to gold, through a series of steps, FDR calling in the gold in 1933 when he was inaugurated, and then Nixon in 1971 severing the last link between the dollar and gold. So now the whole world is on a fiat money standard. What that means is central banks can inflate at will, create endless amounts of money, and of course that leads to inflation and the business cycle. So we have a fundamental problem, Dave, in this country and this world, namely fiat currencies. And the way to solve the problem is to make each currency as good as gold. So gold becomes the international money instead of the dollar.
Amazing, breaking it all down. Now, you're a emeritus professor of finance, and this is kind of neat because you founded the Sabrin Center for Free Enterprise. And this is something that is, of course, of libertarian thought process. That's libertarian with a small L, not to be confused with the Libertarian Party with a large L. I subscribe to a lot of that because I see more success in it than I see with Marxist viewpoints. We seem to have a lot of that going on. I see these opinion editors constantly writing about taking and devaluing certain things. And then we have like the UK saying, we're going to buy property from all these landowners in the United Kingdom, and we're going to use it. You know, we're going to buy it at cut rate, and we're going to use it to build housing because we have a housing crisis. All of this ties into everything. I mean, I think back to what happened in Weimar when a wheelbarrow full of Deutschmarks wouldn't even buy a loaf of bread. We are headed in that direction, are we not?
There's no question about it. We are headed in that direction. Whether we get there is really dependent upon what the Federal Reserve does and what the federal government does. The scenario that I see unfolding in the United States is very similar to what happened between 1965, when we got the Great Society programs, the Vietnam War, and unbelievable amount of spending and money printing. That inflation cycle lasted for 17 years until Volcker came in 1979 and raised interest rates to break the back of the double-digit inflation of the late 70s and early 80s. And that was the end of the last great inflation cycle that we had that lasted 17 years. So if we look at what happened recently with inflation accelerating in 2021 and 2022, is this the beginning of another multi-year inflation cycle where the rate of inflation accelerates, then decelerates, then accelerates, and reaches a crisis point where the central bank has to say, we've got to break the back of inflation because it's really harming the economy? And we had stagflation at the time. High unemployment and high inflation. I think we could be seeing that same scenario unfolding right now, but in a much compressed time frame. 65 to 82 was 17 years. I think we could see this by the end of this decade, where we could have a real major inflation financial crisis by the end of this decade, as this unconscionable spending in Washington continues, the money printing continues, and then the nations of the world say, hey, America, get your financial house in order, because we don't want to hold dollars and government debt if you're going to keep on inflating and devaluing your currency. And that's when I think there's a run on the dollar overseas. What that would mean is that imports would be more expensive as the value of the dollar goes down in foreign exchange markets. And then U.S. companies will raise their prices as well. And so you would have a real runaway inflation. Whether it gets to the wheelbarrow effect like we saw in Germany in 1923 remains to be seen. I mean, it's hard to predict a total collapse of the dollar the way we saw around the world in Zimbabwe, Argentina, and other countries. I mean, China, Russia, they had their hyperinflation as well at the end of World War II and World War I. And so this is not a unique phenomenon. The collapse of currencies has taken place for the last 100 years throughout the Western world and, of course, the Eastern world as well. So I'm concerned, being a student and a teacher of financial history, to say we are headed in the same direction. And that's why I believe gold and silver are probably the most undervalued assets in the world today, given the amount of money that's been created here in the United States and around the world. In fact, I wrote an article several years ago that pointed out that if we were to go back to the gold standard, where each dollar would be backed by gold, gold would have to be $10,000 an ounce. Since then, the amount of dollars created in the United States, as I think, has tripled or quadrupled. That means in order to go back to a gold standard, the gold would have to be $40,000-$50,000 an ounce. That's a mind-boggling number, considering that gold is just about $2,000 an ounce today. But the point is, we have had the most reckless monetary policy in human history. The Federal Reserve has created tens of trillions of dollars in the last 50 years, and that money has raised prices, especially in real estate here in Southwest Florida, where I live now since I retired 3 years ago. And we're seeing it in artwork. Why are wealthy people buying artwork all over the world, Picasso's and Renoir's and Cezanne's and you name it, and they're spending tens of millions of dollars? Because there's evidence that artwork beats the rate of inflation over a long period of time. And so you have these multi-billionaires pouring a lot of money into artwork, vintage cars as well. And for the average person who's just getting by day to day, they don't have the resources to pick up some of these assets. But they can buy junk silver, as you know, Dave. They can go to a local coin shop and buy some junk silver and use that as a store of value, protecting them against the dollar's decline in value, which is inevitable.
Yeah, and you really think 7 years it's going to take that long at the rate? This debt ceiling thing is what most everybody in D.C. is talking about right now, and it's about to enter into debate on the House floor, and they're going to go crazy over this thing. Even Byron Donalds from Southwest Florida is a Republican congressman down there, and he's screaming bloody murder about this thing. We're talking, and the Fed is, I don't believe the Fed is going to stop raising interest rates. Have you seen any sign of that?
No, I think the Fed realizes that they follow the PCE, the Personal Consumption Expenditure Index, and that's still at 5.5% year over year, well above the Fed's target of 2%, which is a bogus target, because in a free market, prices go down. They don't inflate. And the Fed has this very strange model of the U.S. economy that 2% inflation is somehow stable prices. And the concept of stable prices is what got us in trouble in the 1920s, because prices were stable in the 1920s and people thought there was no inflation problem. But real estate and stock prices were going through the roof because of the massive speculation when the Fed was printing money like crazy in the 1920s. So what I would recommend the Republicans do, and this whole debt ceiling debate is really a sideshow. The real main event, Dave, is government spending. Government is now spending $7 trillion a year. Let's put this in perspective. When Trump came into office, spending was $4 trillion a year. So how do we get to $7 trillion a year? It's because of the COVID lockdowns and the money that was pumped into the economy because of the collapse of employment and businesses. So we're not going to be receding to that $4.5-5 trillion expenditure. This is what happens when we have a crisis in America. Spending goes up, but never recedes to its pre-crisis level. And that's the problem we're facing today. So in many ways, Trump is mainly responsible for the increase in spending, because during his administration, spending went from $4 trillion to $6.5 trillion. So he was no fiscal conservative by any stretch of the imagination. So what the Republicans should say is, we and the Democrats are responsible for this budget fiasco that we have called government spending of $7 trillion a year. And what we need to do, as Kevin McCarthy pointed out in the Wall Street Journal in an op-ed the other day, let's look at wasteful spending to begin with, because who's in favor of wasteful spending? So what McCarthy should have called for with Biden is saying, let every agency of the federal government cut their budget by 10%. That would get rid of the, quote, wasteful spending. And then he should say, you know what? We're spending money that's not authorized by the Constitution, and we all took an oath to uphold the Constitution. So let's start to phase out all the spending that is not authorized by the Constitution. That's a debate that we should be having, and I would love to participate in it, because I've been writing about this for 30, 40 years, about what is a constitutional budget, and we certainly are far away from that.
Have you ever had a chance to testify before any of these committees in Washington?
No, I haven't. But
man, come on. This is you're the sort of guy that I need to have on the front line up there screaming at Congress, telling them, look, you can all sit there, because the majority of them, as you know, go back to their districts and pat themselves on the back, talking about all the great things they've done and all the dollars they brought home for their districts. And you see, the thing is I hear presidents bragging about all the stuff they've done. But when it comes to taking a blame, they don't want any part of that.
No.
This is the thing about politics. And you even wrote about that in your book from Immigrant to Public Intellectual. Politics is dirty.
It's beyond dirty. I participated in politics. I ran for governor. I was the first third-party candidate running on the Libertarian line in 1997. That's how I end my memoir. And I have two chapters devoted to the campaign. And it was an eye-opening campaign. When I told my late father that I was running for governor, he said, remember, politics is dirty. He never had a degree in political science and never went to college. But as a New York City cab driver, he spoke to a lot of people, politicians, business people. And he had that street savvy about politics. And surviving the Holocaust gave him a very cynical view of people in power, to say the least.
Understandably so. And see, the thing is that the perspective we're having here, folks, and you have to keep an open mind and understand what Dr. Murray Sabrin is, you know, Sabrin Center for Free Enterprise. And he founded this in New Jersey. And we just heard that Chris Christie next week is going to be announcing his candidacy for U.S. president. And this is turning into a real shift show of serious magnitude. It's a real problem, because we have not yet gotten a hold of our election cycle. That's part of the problem. You saw what happened in the last New Jersey. I'm sure you were paying very close attention to that with Governor Phil Murphy and his, challenger, which I thought was rather interesting. You have an Irishman running, an Italian running against an Irishman. It's one of these fascinating things about, when Chris Christie was in there, you had Bridgegate. I mean, you have all these different crises that are caused, and they seem to be able to sweep it under the rug. But this is one thing when people's pocketbooks are being affected by what we're talking about here. And this is historical perspective, folks. If you have a comment and you are listening to the show live between 7 and 9 Central, 8 and 10 Eastern, you're welcome to call up with your questions at 844-769-2944. We have Dr. Murray Sabrin on the phone with us. He is the author of a book, From Immigrant to Public Intellectual, an American Story. He has a Substack page if you want to go research this. It's murraysabrin.substack.com. And, of course, we take your phone calls. If you're interested, 844-769-2944. I think, Dr. Sabrin, you have gotten a lot of this history. And I remember way back at reading about history in 1929, about when the market crashed and all these people thought the stock market was so wonderful, people were actually jumping off buildings. And, you know, during this last 2008 debacle and beyond, we saw the same thing happening. People were jumping off buildings. History repeats itself. Those who are ignorant of are condemned to repeat it, according to Satayana. I guess that works in finances too, right?
Oh, there's no question about it. I mean, this is why I wrote the book, Navigating the Boom-Bust Cycle, and why the Federal Reserve sucks, about how the Federal Reserve has been the engine of inflation, the engine of financial instability, the engine of economic distortions in the economy. And the historical record is all there. All you have to do is have a good understanding of how business and finance and banking and money works. And once you put that all together, and I take my lead from the Austrian School of Economics, the business cycle that Ludwig von Mises put together, and his students have continued in that tradition. Murray Rothbard's 1963 book, America's Great Depression, which is probably the best book about how the events unfolded in the 1920s and Hoover's reaction to the decline in the stock market and the unfolding depression. And his book about the Panic of 1819 is considered the best book about that period, America's first Great Depression, the Panic of 1819. And here's something else I came across in doing my research about the financial history. We had a panic in 1819. 100 years later, we had the so-called Forgotten Depression of 1920-21. And then 100 years later, we have the implosion of 2020 with the COVID lockdowns. So it seems that every 100 years, we have a major economic crisis. 1873, the Panic of 1873. 1973, we have the oil crisis. The Panic of 1907, the housing crisis of 2007. 1929, 100 years later, Dave, is 2029. And I'm not saying that's 100% certainty that we will have anything like 1929 in 2029, but it's uncanny how these 100-year cycles are repeated over and over again in American financial history, and that should give people pause saying we are on that road to a major financial crisis because of the Federal Reserve and government spending. And so we have to step back and let our members of Congress know that they better get their house in order, otherwise we could have a calamity that would rival anything we've seen in American history.
Yeah, no doubt. And see, of course, you recognize this. This is a Federal Reserve note. A note, last time I checked, was a promise to pay.
Yeah.
I'm sure you explain that right up front in your classes when you were teaching finance. And people still, as long as we the people are willing to put our store of value into this thing right here, this is the problem, is people are not paying attention to what's going on. But we have a very astute audience here. We go to the phones. Rich in Pennsylvania, you are on the phone with Dr. Murray Sabrin. Go.
Hi, Doc. Hi, Dave. Thing that concerns me, well, start biblically in the book of James, second chapter. It says, your gold and silver's cankered, the rust of them doth corrupt you. Heap together treasures against the last days. Unless, you know, the value of, say, a silver dollar. Say I take a silver dollar, okay, and the market's collapse, what have you. I take that into my local grocery store. I try to buy a loaf of bread with it. They're going to ask for another 29 cents.
Yeah, they are. We appreciate that. We're on the break here. If you want to hang on, Rich, we appreciate that. Dr. Sabrin, thanks for joining us. We'll be back on the other side of our break. We'll continue our conversation with Dr. Murray Sabrin. Stay with us.
iComplex CS is a comprehensive natural medicine formula to nourish and heal eye tissue formulated by a board-certified MD ophthalmologist, Dr. Robert Abel. Why you need vitamins for your eyesight? There is a direct and proven physiological connection between the nutrients we put into our body and the quality of our eyesight. Some vitamins for eyesight can be absorbed from the food we eat, but other vital nutrients cannot, especially if you're not eating a daily, nutritionally balanced diet. Additional supplements are essential for optimal eye health as well as your overall physical health. With 23 vitamins and nutrients such as N-acetylcysteine, which is important for removing toxic substances from the liver, this, the most complete clinical strength eye and total body multivitamin available in one supplement. Call the Power Mall at 877-817-9829 or order online at thepowermall.com.
Hi, it's Joyce Reilly with the Power Hour. There's something really fun and exciting about discovering products that make life more pleasant and enjoyable. Well, Miracle 2 soaps definitely fit that description. The shelves at the supermarket are packed with soaps and cleansers that are full of chemicals that slowly destroy our health and the environment. Miracle 2 products are all natural, like the green soap that can replace your bath, laundry, household soaps, and cleaning products. And please try Miracle 2's skin lotion. It's quickly absorbed and not greasy like all those other mass-produced lotions. Miracle 2 moisturizer is full of fabulous oils and emollients that leave the skin healthy and baby soft. I guarantee after you discover how amazing Miracle 2 products are, you'll recommend them to everyone you know. Just call 877-817-9829. That's 877-817-9829, or visit thepowermall.com. You'll learn why so many people say it's not just soap, it's a miracle.
Boost your immune system naturally this year with oil of oregano, a potent germ killer. This is the true wild oregano oil P73, a blend of edible spices of wild oregano grown on natural mineral-rich soils. Research published in the International Journal of Food Microbiology found that oil of oregano is an excellent germicide capable of killing a wide range of fungi and bacteria. Get it today by visiting thepowermall.com or calling 877-817-9829.
My husband is a welder by trade, but he grinds his welding products, and he doesn't wear a helmet or a mask to do that. And he had this cruddy stuff in his lungs, and it just wasn't going away. And I heard you one time talking about the Sera enzyme for the lungs, and my goodness, I mean, he can breathe so much easier, and I don't hear that crud in his lungs. Thank you so very much.
To find out more about this product or others like it, go to our website at thepowermall.com. That's thepowermall.com. Call 877-817-9829. That number again is 877-817-9829. Jay's standing by to take your call. Now more than ever, we need your support. Buy from the good guys at thepowermall.com. That's thepowermall.com.
Just recently, we both started on the lithium balance. I want to keep my memory. My two in-laws are dealing with, you know, the Alzheimer's. They're in their 90s, and I see it. I don't want to be like that, and I've heard you talk about lithium to, you know, improve our memory and keep us up there.
Call 877-817-9829. That number again is 877-817-9829. Buy from the good guys at thepowermall.com. That's thepowermall.com.
Minutes after the hour. Dave Krieger with you. Welcome back to the Power Hour, where OptiVita products are all 10% off this week. And by the way, for those of you tuning in, you can help support us with your donation of $100 or more to get that Joyce Reilly coffee mug. But at the same time, if you go to thepowerhour.com, we are going to be giving away a RickSatelliteUSA.com Galaxy 19 satellite system to one of you lucky listeners. And the thing is that you don't have to buy anything. All you got to do is write us a letter and say, hey, I deserve this because. You can send us an email to support@thepowerhour.com, or you can write us a letter to P.O. Box 14921. That would be Springfield, Missouri, 65814. And we're going to be looking at the letters, and Rick's going to pick a winner, and we're going to give it away in the air. That's how it works. And then you just hook it up. There's no fees to pay. I mean, it's a wonderful thing to be able to connect to multiple radio stations and TV stations around the world via satellite. It's a wonderful way if you have problems picking us up. Of course, we have some new radio stations, Christian Radio, WBGS Radio, 1610 AM in St. Pete, joining us today, as well as WKDW 97.5 in Northport, Florida, kdwradio.com for those of you that want to dial into the website. Dr. Murray Sabourin is with us. He is the founder of the Sabourin Center for Free Enterprise. He is a basically anything having to do with money. He's like the guy behind the history on that. We have been sharing information. Rich, you were still holding with some words of wisdom.
Yes. Still here.
Go ahead. Finish your comment.
You know, even though our our dollar is supposedly backed up by silver and gold. Our economy is not set up to receive that as a transaction for merchandise. And a better commodity, if we're talking precious metals and silver and gold, would be brass and lead in the form of a bullet. That way I can go hunt for my food, I can protect myself, I can take your gold and silver if you have any, and it's going to be a more viable substance in these last days, because everything's going to go digital anyways. So if you have gold and silver, unless you have a digital setup, there's nothing you can do.
Well, Rich, the thing is that I'm always looking into this, and I appreciate your calling and chiming in on that point, because, see, the central bank digital currency right now is being tested by the Fed in these 12-week pilot programs, and I'm sure, Dr. Sabourin, you know all about that, and our circumstances are such that if we don't say no to digital currencies, they're going to be able to use these currencies digitally to control all of us, where we go, what we do, and what Rich is alluding to is the fact that this is one of the reasons why many Americans, especially our listeners, are stocking up on food, guns, and ammo, because they feel that that time is coming where it might be every man for himself, and we're going to have to collectively come together in community efforts to try to survive this mess that the government itself has created. What's your thought process on this?
Well, digital currencies, central bank digital currencies, is probably the most dangerous, not probably, is the most dangerous financial proposal in human history, because that would mean that cash would no longer be available for us to engage in transactions. So the goal of central bank digital currencies is twofold. One is to flush out the black market with drug dealers so they couldn't use cash any longer. But more importantly, central bank digital currencies will give the federal government access to every transaction we make, from buying a newspaper at the local candy shop or paper shop, to buying stocks, bonds, real estate, and what our donations are to charitable organizations, what our purchases are for firearms and ammunition. This would mean that Professor Hayek's 1944 book, The Road to Serfdom, would become a reality. We would be serfs of the federal government. They could block our purchases of different foodstuffs. They could force us to buy certain things. This is the most dangerous development in human history, and the American people better wake up and smell the coffee, because if this happens, then our freedoms are totally gone. The Bill of Rights are obliterated. And that we will be subservient to the federal government. And there's some people that will cheer this on because they think it'll be a wonderful thing to get rid of cash and to have a seamless way of making purchases. But I can tell you from my reading of financial history and looking at the U.S. economy unfolding for the past half century, this has to be stopped dead in its track. In fact, here in Florida, Governor DeSantis signed the bill outlawing central bank digital currency. I think Texas followed suit. So I think a lot of the southern states realize that this would be a disaster for the American people, and they're going to protect their own citizens. So I think what's being set up here, Dave, is a clash between states and the federal government. And that is something that is going to be an incredible development, because we need to downsize the federal government. And one way to do so is getting them out of the money area, getting them out of housing, getting them out of education, getting them out of medical care. And we need to have a free market economy, which means we, the people, are sovereign, that we have the right to keep our money. And that's why I wrote a book called Tax-Free 2000 30 years ago, to have a tax-free society. And so the government would serve the people rather than we serving the government.
Which is what it seems like we're doing right now. And this is a very sad state of affairs. Folks, the phone lines are still open, 844-769-2944. For those of you, 8 to 10 Eastern, 7 to 9 Central time, that are listening to the show, that's when our live call-in segments are. And so, you know, if you hear something that you want to chime in on, this is your big opportunity. We're talking about money. That's everybody's problem, really, because we have a fiat currency system right now. And a lot of people on my show, believe it or not, Dr. Sabourin, have brought up the fact of the Organic Act of 1871. Could you, for those that aren't really aware of it, you have the historical perspective on that, right?
That I'm not familiar with. That sort of escaped me.
It's like when the U.S. government couldn't pay its bills, and this is when all the central bankers, the Rothschilds and everybody else, came in and says, hey, you're going to have to incorporate, which is when the U.S. government became an Inc.
Uh-huh. Well, I look at
just so you know, they're loaning. Are they loaning money to? You know, this is the thing about loaning money. And, you know, I don't know if you're familiar with the Jerome Daly case, the Credit River case up in Wisconsin. Yeah, that was where the judge actually, he convinced the jury, and the judge actually gave him, without overturning the jury's verdict, the jury ruled that the bank loaned him nothing when they loaned him credit. Because the banks aren't allowed to loan credit. They have to loan, you know, they loan money. That's what they're supposed to loan is money. And see, I think people are confused about that because, see, Jerome Daly, who was an attorney that litigated that case, ended up getting disbarred. And 6 months after the judge allowed the jury to rule in his favor, the judge ended up poisoned. So you got to wonder just exactly how much the Federal Reserve, it's not federal and it's not a reserve, how right. willing they are to stop us from trying to stop CBDCs where they can get ultimate control over us. What's your take on that?
Well, we already have digital currency. I mean, I get money from various financial institutions. It comes into my checking account. And so that's a digital currency. I don't know. I have very little cash around, as most people do. In fact, young people, I think, don't have any cash. Yeah. They use Apple Pay or whatever they do on their smartphone.
Yeah. I know.
To make transactions. So people are already used to digital currency. The question is, who should control it? And that's really the issue, is who controls every aspect of our lives or the sectors of the economy. And because of the New Deal, the Great Society programs, and all the other programs following suit since the 1960s, governments have taken over more and more control of our economy. That's the issue the Republicans should be slamming their hands on the desk for. We have to get the government out of areas of the economy that are not authorized by the Constitution and do not make good economic sense. The best way to have a prosperous economy is to allow the men and women entrepreneurs who, despite all the taxes, the regulations, and the mandates out of federal, state, and local governments, are producing an incredible abundance of goods and services for the American people. You can go on Amazon, order something in the evening, and it's there the next day in your house. Years ago, that would be unheard of. You have to use an 800 number and wait a week or two to get the product. Here, you get it literally delivered overnight in a seamless process. So logistically, we've come a long way from the commerce of the 50s and 60s, when I was growing up in New York City, to e-commerce today. That's the really good news. And you got to be optimistic, because the entrepreneurs in America, the inventors, do not stop because of what the interest rates are doing in the country. They continue to invent, innovate, and get their products to the marketplace. And I saw this when I was researching my book on navigating the boom-bust cycle. During COVID, companies couldn't have customers come into their stores, so they went online and thrived because they readjusted their business model. And this is what entrepreneurs do. They are the great people in America who look at the economy and say, what can I do to improve my business, or what barriers are there that I can get around, up and under, in order to get the goods and services that the people want? And this is why you've got to be optimistic about the future. But we have these bumps in the road, as you know, Dave, given yeah. the history of America, that government sometimes throws a huge monkey wrench into the economy, like the Great Depression, where it lasted a full decade or longer because of the Hoover Roosevelt policy. So we've got to be vigilant. That's what we have to do. And we have to speak out about this. This is why I hope to connect with my congressman very soon. And I'm in touch with one of his staffers right here in Southwest Florida, and say, listen, deal with the major issue, which is the budget, the $7 trillion budget that we have, which, by the way, was about $7 trillion, which was $4 trillion when Trump was elected. So the budget is up nearly 75% in what? 8 years, 6 years. That is an incredible increase in a period of relative peace for the American people. And so that's the debate we should be having, not the debate over the ceiling, which is, I think, as I said, it's a sideshow. The real issue is the amount of money the federal government spends each year.
Yep. Doug in Virginia, you're on the phone with Dr. Murray Sabrin. Go ahead.
Well, doesn't the money that the the government, or as people claiming to be government, have to spend, doesn't that have to keep expanding because of the Ponzi scheme? If it doesn't expand, it collapses in a Great Depression-type cycle, and they start all over again after they kill off a bunch of people and take the land away from the people.
That's an interesting point. In fact, you can make the claim the whole federal government is one big Ponzi scheme. We know Social Security and Medicare are intergenerational chain letters. That's a polite way of saying it's a Ponzi scheme, because when the government takes money from you in terms of payroll taxes, Social Security and Medicare, you do not have your own account like an IRA or a 401k. That money is already spent, or some of it is put in reserve in the so-called trust accounts of both Medicare and Social Security. The same thing with other government programs. You have to have, because the population is growing and more people are involved with Medicaid and other government programs, the government has to keep on expanding in order to meet the demands of those programs. So what I've advocated in my 1995 book on how to create a tax-free America is we should begin the process of privatization and non-profitization. Non-profitization means that all the social services of the federal government, state and local governments, should be handled by the nonprofit sector, which in the old days were called mutual aid societies. And they work beautifully at local communities where people from the same ethnic group, religious group, whatever tied them together, they would pool their resources voluntarily and provide unemployment benefits, health insurance, and other services that people want on a routine basis. And this is the genius of the American people up until the Great Depression, when the federal government took over more and more of these services. And so what I'm saying, we have to revert back to what worked for more than 150 years in America, called mutual aid societies or nonprofits.
So I mean, the thing is, though, Dr. Sabourin, is that if history is repeating itself, as you pointed out eloquently during the last segment, we can look forward to the fact that the federal government overreach could continue if we allow this cycle to go into another bust.
Absolutely. I mean, there's no proposal in Congress on the Republican side, who say they believe in free enterprise and limited government, to start to downsize the federal government. All they want to do is manage the welfare warfare state. They don't want to cut it. I mean, Reagan campaigned in 1980 to get rid of the Department of Education and the Department of Energy. And here it is 42 years later, and those programs still suck up tens of billions of dollars each year and cause chaos in education and in the energy sector. So why aren't Republicans saying, we are going to implement what Ronald Reagan rightfully declared are two agencies that should not be part of the federal government, energy and education? And that's where courage comes in. That's where insight comes in. That's where knowledge comes in. And unfortunately, they're not doing so. And therefore, they are as much of the part of the problem as the Democrats.
Wow. Doug, you still with us?
Yeah, I agree. People need to get courage. And on a personal level, people need the courage to stop paying into the income tax. If you don't understand it, go get Dave Champion's book and get your mind wrapped around who's actually required to pay that income tax.
Yep. Okay. I appreciate it. Yeah, I get it. You know, here's another argument, and this has gotten so many people, including friends of mine, thrown into prison. You know, we had Judge Learned Hand from the Supreme Court of the United States said that there is nothing wrong with avoiding taxes, mm-hmm. to minimize your tax burden. There's nothing wrong with it. And that's one of the things I've expressed on the show. Friends of mine have tried to help people. There have been certain, like there was a Honolulu police officer in Hawaii that went through the whole thing that was found not guilty because they could not figure out what tax he was owed based on the testimony of CPAs and people that have researched the Internal Revenue Code, which half of Congress doesn't even understand what the Internal Revenue Code is. Most CPAs, you put in 12 different CPAs, you get 12 different tax returns back. It's the craziest thing, but see, we have people, Dr. Sabourin, on the show that are just flat out, they don't want that 16th Amendment there. They think it imposed all sorts of unnecessary things, that it's a violation of our constitutional rights, You know, we had a Revolutionary War based on a 3% tea tax. And now how many taxes? We got 23 different taxes on a loaf of bread. So, you know, the thing is that I have always advocated forming an LLC. And my wife and I had this discussion one day, and we said, look, she said, not these people that are my age, you know, and older, they don't want to, and here I'm dating myself again, they don't want to start up an LLC and have a business. They want to retire and just be left alone. I said, our federal government's not going to let that happen. You know that, I know that, which is why I've told people, if there's anything you can do, and this is what Dr. Saber just alluded to, if there's anything you could do on a community level as a reason to have a corporation to get those kinds of deductions that are available to you, contact a certified public accountant. Contact somebody that's got a financial planner that's got some knowledge and know-how and skill set to move you in that direction. I love it when we have SCORE counselors, and I know you know what those are, Dr. Sabrin. I actually talked to one once that came to my business and said, the objective to being a success in life is to take in more than you put out. Hence the idea of making this thing work. Kevin in Georgia, you're on the phone with Dr. Sabrin. Go ahead.
Hi. I had heard that all wars are bankers' wars, and I'm just wondering if we're finally at the tipping point like we have been in other wars where possibly NATO attacking Russia and things of that nature, and what do you think about that?
How close we are to it. Appreciate that question. It's very valid. Go ahead, Dr. Sabrin.
Well, 40 years ago, just about 40 years ago, one of the best monographs on the subject was written by Murray Rothbard, who was a member of my dissertation committee and a student of Ludwig von Mises, called Wall Street Banks and U.S. Foreign Policy. And he points out how secretaries of state traditionally have come from Wall Street. Wall Street thrives on government spending to some degree because they underwrite the bonds. They're involved with the military-industrial complex that Eisenhower warned us about in his farewell address in 1961. And so what happened to the peace dividend that we were supposed to get when the Soviet Union collapsed in 1991? All those of us that were pro-peace, anti-war, anti-intervention applauded the collapse of the Soviet Union and thought that we would have a new dawn in America and around the world with the so-called evil empire disappearing before our eyes. But yet the military spending has probably tripled since 1991, if not more. Because there are always, quote, enemies overseas to combat, according to the military-industrial complex. And, by the way, the neoconservatives, who in 1997 put together their blueprint for the collapse of the Soviet Union called Project for a New American Century. That's how we got involved in Iraq twice. That's how we overthrew Gaddafi in Libya. And now they want to do the same thing in Russia by getting rid of Putin. And remember, when the Soviet Union collapsed, the first Bush administration, told Gorbachev that NATO will not expand eastward to the steppes of Russia. And the American government broke its promise. And that's why Putin is rightfully concerned from his perspective about all the American bases surrounding Russia, as are American bases surrounding China. There was a wonderful map that I saw in an article a few weeks ago showing a map of Russia and China and all the American bases around those two superpowers. Could you imagine if Russia and China had bases in Mexico, Canada, Cuba, Central America, South America? We would rightfully be very concerned about our national security. So looking at from the eyes of Russia and China, they're concerned about America military surrounding their two nations. And that's another discussion we should have about how do we create a peaceful world. And President Kennedy, in his 1963 commencement address at American University, said, we despise the Soviet system, but we have to live with them peacefully. Otherwise, we're going to be blowing up this little planet called Earth. And so what happened 5 months later? He was assassinated.
Wow. You know, and history repeats itself all over, doesn't it? So this is the thing that really bothers me. Kevin, any other comment before we let you go?
Well, two other things. I had heard that in the last 4 years, the federal government has grown 40% And also, I had heard that one of the other talk shows, that the F-16s are going to be retrofitted to carry nuclear bombs, and they're going to, and the NATO is going to have the biggest aircraft exercise, war exercise, in their history, and they're thinking about actually going in and taking out Russia, and fairly soon. So I'm just kind of concerned, you know, Russia has all these bomb shelters for their civilians, but the deep underground bases for our elites, which I heard that the Senate, U.S. Senate, has all been given satellite cell phones.
Yep, they have. And that this is what they were offered, that the senators were offered it, Kevin. And we are out of time for today's show. But I'm telling you, this is all leading up to, and the bankers could actually, if it's bankers wars like everybody seems to think, this could actually result in the annihilation of the very banks that set this mess up if we get into a full-out nuclear conflict. And that's the big decision we have to make. There's so many decisions that we, the people, need to start thinking about. In the meantime, Dr. Murray Sabrin has a .substack.com website, the author of From Immigrant to Public Intellectual, An American Story. Thank you so much for joining us. We'll have to have you back on again. This has been some really interesting conversation, sir.
Great to be with you, Dave. I enjoyed it. And we've got to educate the American people about what is happening and what could happen if we allow the federal government to continue on its path.
We do. Thank you so much. God bless all of you. In the meantime, we'll see you tomorrow. In the meantime, from all of us here at the Power Hour, God bless you and God bless what's left of the United States of America. See you tomorrow.
Create an environment that's hostile to invading organisms. Made with a blend of herbs and other natural ingredients such as wormwood, which has often been used in traditional medicine as a dewormer. If unwanted organisms are affecting your health, Paratrex can help bring it all back in balance. Order today from thepowermill.com. Or call 877-817-9829. Are you tired of trying to figure out how to get all your fruits and vegetables into your busy lifestyle? OptiVita Complete Essentials provides you with 22 whole food vitamins and minerals, 29 fruits and vegetables, probiotics, antioxidants, and botanicals for ultimate health and nutrition. 30 individual packs, now less than $3 per day. Get your OptiVita Complete Essentials by calling 877-817-9829 or order online at thepowermall.com.
I don't know where to start. There's so many products you guys offer. I think one of the first things I ever ordered from you guys was your clay. The clay is miraculous. I could not do without that. And the charcoal, you know, you can get yourself in a bathtub to kind of help take the toxins out. So just those two alone, but I could go on to the OptiVita Silver Lozenges. Of course, then the Oregaresp and the P73, the oil of oregano, and your Vitamir toothpaste. Again, I could go on and on and on.
Call Jay at thepowermall.com and receive superior customer service. Call 1-877-817-9829 right now. That number again is 1-877-817-9829. Support small businesses and buy from the good guys at thepowermall.com. That's thepowermall.com.
My husband is a welder by trade, but he grinds his welding products, and he doesn't wear a helmet or a mask to do that. And he had this cruddy stuff in his lungs, and it just wasn't going away. And I heard you one time talking about the Sera enzyme for the lungs. And my goodness, I mean, he can breathe so much easier. And I don't hear that crud in his lungs. Thank you so very much.
To find out more about this product or others like it, go to our website at thepowermall.com. That's thepowermall.com. Call 877-817-9829. That number again is 877-817-9829. Jay's standing by to take your call. Now more than ever, we need your support. Buy from the good guys at thepowermall.com. That's thepowermall.com.